Welcome to the Resilience Roundup podcast. I am your host, Lataria Walker. The Army can be a tough profession. Mix in additional responsibilities like leading troops, attending college, maintaining a home, parenting, keeping up with finances, basically living life. How can we successfully manage everything? How can we not just cope, but learn, grow, and thrive? Resilience. That's it. Resilience is the ability to persevere, adapt, and grow in dynamic or stressful environments. Resilience encompasses internal motivation, persistence, and how soldiers revitalize, recover, and adapt in order to respond constructively to challenges in their daily lives. Training and education empowers leaders and soldiers to demonstrate resilience. When individuals gain experience in applying these skills, it enables cohesive team building and drives readiness. The Resilience Roundup podcast is a place where you can find resources that will help you maintain your resilience. You are resilient. Welcome to the Resilience Roundup podcast, episode 13. I am Lataria Walker, your podcast host. Today, our guest is Ms. Leslie Wyrick, a suicide prevention specialist and advocate. She is an Elkhart County, Indiana Suicide Prevention Coalition board member and a Mental Health Youth First Aid Certified, QPR Certified, Sources of Strength Provisional Trainer. This episode's topic is 1 Second of Hope, where Ms. Wyrick will share her riveting story of loss and the unique circumstances that garnered her national media attention. She will also discuss the brain triggers and responses that regulate impulse control, decision-making, and conflict resolution, and how emotions and fight-or-flight responses occur. She will offer practical tools for building resilience while facing a crisis. Ms. Wyrick, thank you so much for joining us today, ma'am. Please tell us a bit more about yourself.
Thank you, Lataria. It's an honor to be here and speaking today. Well, I had built a career for many, many years in sales and marketing. The last 12 years of my career, I was an executive recruiter. So everything in my life had been built around sales and marketing. And then with a knock on my door at 2:30 in the morning on September the 10th of 2016, which for your listeners who may not be aware, that happens to be World Suicide Prevention Awareness Day. With that knock on the door, my life changed forever and the life of my family changed forever. As we were notified by two police officers in the middle of the night that our only son, who was a junior at Wabash College in west of Indianapolis, Indiana, had taken his life. And in that moment, you know, everything changed for us. So when we were notified, our son was being transported by ambulance. And we were told we needed to get there as quickly as possible. You can only imagine being woke up in the middle of the night with your doorbell ringing and two police officers on your porch. So that's a sound that I say no parent ever wants to hear. We jumped in our car as quickly as we could. We had a 3-hour drive ahead of us from where we lived and started heading toward Indianapolis. That particular evening, there was a terrible storm, lightning, thunder, rain like I've never seen before in my life. And we were only about a 30-minute down the road when our cell phone rang, and it was the emergency room doctor. He wanted to know if we were on our way, and we said that we were, and he asked if we could pull over to the side of the road. And in that moment, he shared with us that the ambulance had just arrived with our son, and there was no pulse. And so we sat on the side of that road for about 10 minutes, just in shock, and then drove on the remaining 2.5 hours to the hospital. to arrive in time. Fortunately, we were very, very blessed that we arrived in time to be able to harvest both of our son's heart valves, his corneas, and all of his bone and tissue, because he had signed the back of his driver's license to become an organ donor. So for us, that was the first glimpse of hope in that evening. And then that sort of just took us on a path of sharing our story. We knew within 24 hours of losing our son, the amount of people who reached out to us who had also lost children to suicide or loved ones to suicide, we knew this was a story that we needed to share if we could help any other family or prevent them from going through the tragedy of losing their child to suicide. So this was before COVID, obviously, in 2016. And I was working full-time as an executive recruiter. And I started very organically going out to schools, fundraisers, just local organizations and speaking. But on the 2-year anniversary of our son's death, which once again would be September 10th of 2018, World Suicide Prevention and Awareness Day, we received a message from one of Austin's former roommates. And it said, "Mr. and Mrs. Weirich, I don't know if you heard, but Evan Hansen, the co-captain of the Wabash football team, took his life today." And he said, "I'm sorry to have to tell you this, especially today, but I did not want you and your husband to hear about it on the news." So now our grief, which we were really still trying to navigate through in under 2 years of losing Austin, we're sharing it with another family. Evan Hansen was only 21 years old. Our son was only 20. So both young men knew each other and both played football for the same small private all-male college, and both took their lives by sheer coincidence on World Suicide Prevention and Awareness Day. So within a week after Evan's death, we were contacted by the largest newspaper in our state, which happens to be the Indianapolis Star. And they wanted to know if we would share our story because Evan's parents were going to speak about Evan's death. They thought if both families could share our story, that maybe someone reading that article could be helped. We agreed. The following Wednesday, that article came out, and by Saturday, 3 days later, 4 days later, our story had made national news as a human interest sports story. So that really launched my public speaking. I started getting contacted by organizations that read the article. And once again, working full-time, trying to speak in the evenings, on the weekends, there really just weren't enough hours in the day. So in January of the following year, so that would be about approximately 3 months after the article came out, I took the stage for the largest nonprofit in our state as their keynote speaker. And I shared our story in 24 minutes that evening. And within 2 hours of coming off that stage, they told me they broke a 5-year fundraising record, and we raised $249,000 that evening to put licensed clinical therapists in 25 of our local schools where I live in Indiana. So something told me if our story had that much power, and if our story could reach that many people who would want to support young men's mental health and mental health in general, that I needed to keep sharing it and I needed to keep telling it. Never could I have ever imagined where this would have taken us, but 7 Septembers later, we just had the 7-year anniversary of the loss of our son on Sunday, on World Suicide Prevention Awareness Day, and the Hansen family had their 5-year anniversary of Evan's death. We walked together every year on that weekend in a 5K in memory of both of our sons. All the proceeds from that 5K go to the Austin Weirich Memorial Scholarship Fund. We have the only scholarship in our county that's earmarked for any young student who wants to go into a mental health related field. This year, we're proud to say we got our scholarship fully endowed. And through our community foundation, every dollar is matched at 25%, up to $25,000 a year. So we're trying to raise as much as we can to give away as many mental health scholarships to students as possible. So that's a little bit about our backstory and what has happened since then. I say I've been given a platform with the military, and I feel very, very fortunate and very blessed. In December of 2021, I was invited to speak at Fort Bliss in El Paso, Texas. They had had 20 suicides in the last 15 months, and 19 of the 20 were over personal relationships. So I do a deep dive talk into what's happening. And in our son's backstory was about a personal relationship with a young woman. They had had an argument that evening. His teammate Evan's backstory was very different. His parents donated his brain tissue, and he had come back confirmed stage one CTE. He'd been playing tackle football since he was 7 years old. So both of our sons had very different backstories, but I always teach everybody that suicide's the perfect storm. It's a lot of little things leading up to that moment. When that young brain gets overwhelmed in a split second. So I teach people about their amygdala, their fight or flight response. We talk about the big three emotions that particularly young people feel when they get overwhelmed in a moment, which are anger, anxiety, and sadness. And what are those emotions they default to based on their personality? So what do we do to hold on in that moment? Because the front part of our brain, which is the most important, which has higher level reasoning, decision-making, impulse control, anger management, all the things that my son could have used that night. He had 5 more years for that part of his brain to be fully developed. So we teach about the brain. We talk about the brain. We teach healthy coping skills. And particularly when I go on these bases and I speak with many young Army soldiers who were the same age as my son, I say to them, it only takes 1 second of hope to be here tomorrow. So let's talk about when these things happen, not if, but when they happen, how are you going to hold on so you can get through that moment and be here tomorrow? So we teach very healthy coping skills, and I give them tools and resources. And for me, it's all about connection. I say connection is protection, and we teach them how to turn to their protective factors in their life, the people in their life that will keep them grounded and safe. So we teach them how to walk away and go for a run, go work out, get out of that situation that you're in. Do not let the back of your brain and your emotions do your thinking for you in that moment. So then you can make a better choice than my son did or his teammate did, and you can be here tomorrow.
Ms. Wyrick, thank you so much for your unwavering commitment, you know, to this very important topic. I have a question for you. Did you see this coming? Did you see the signs in Austin?
That's a wonderful question. I get asked that question quite frequently. And when I share, the last day of my son's life was very typical, actually very happy day. He FaceTimed me. He called his dad. He went out for burgers with his friends. But one of the things that my son always struggled with, and I will say he was a high achiever, and the chink in his armor was always personal relationships with young women. Because he was such a perfectionist, he put that high level of achievement on himself in all that he did. He was the president of his all 4 years of high school, the president of his freshman through senior class, scholar athlete all 4 years. So when he met up with a young woman, he was very intense. And when the relationships wouldn't work in high school or in college, which many times young relationships don't, you're trying to figure out who you are, he would always emotionally plummet. And so he had been in a relationship with this young woman less than 6 months. Yes, we had him in counseling the summer before. We actually thought he was doing much better. And we thought the relationship was over because he had told us that it was. We did learn after his death that the relationship had not ended. And that evening, this young woman showed up and they had an argument. And that was the catalyst moment for his brain getting overwhelmed in that moment and making a permanent decision about a temporary problem. So he struggled growing up with personal relationships with young women because they could never meet his expectations because he was such a perfectionist.
That's very interesting. So the title of our episode today is 1 Second of Hope, and you talk a lot about hope.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit more about the hope that you have for the future.
That's my favorite question you just asked me. So when I speak and I talk about the brain, after we understand our brain and our physical, you know, brain and how it's wired, we talk about hope because hope actually has clinical research behind it. There's a reason I named my national speaking program Leslie's Hope, because hope has been shown to release endorphins, Oxytocin is a good chemical. It's a good hormone. From a 30-second hug, we can reduce our cortisol level, our stress hormone, and it releases oxytocin in our bloodstream. So why hope is so important is because hope is expectancy. Hope is expecting, looking forward to something. The very definition of hope is expectancy. So you're expecting to see some friends this evening for dinner, or maybe go to a movie this weekend. So hope is so very important to keep in the front of our brain because number one, when we're expecting things to happen, good things to happen, we have that endorphin release in our brain. When then those good chemicals like oxytocin, when they get released, it calms our nervous system. It actually calms us down. When our nervous system isn't in that fight or flight mode, when it's in a calmer place, our brain can think more clearly and then we can make better decisions. So I always say connection through people, connection, having something to look forward to, connection leads to hope and hope saves lives. So when I speak, I always say it only takes 1 second of hope to be here tomorrow. Because if you think about this, hope is the last thing we ever lose. So as long as we can hold on to that 1 second of hope, we can be here tomorrow. So I really give them tools and resources when I speak on ways to hold on to hope. I give them the crisis text line hotline, which is 988. And then they press 1. The military has a special extension. So you're going to speak to a trained counselor who is a veteran or an active duty soldier, someone who understands the stress of your life. So I give them that. I give them 741-741 because that's a text number. And we do know younger people who've grown up in the digital generation, the Gen Zs, prefer to text. And I say someone will text you back in under 5 minutes. So hold on, hold on. And I said, because no matter how bad you're feeling in this moment, it will not last forever. But we have to keep you safe in that moment when your brain is lying to you and the back of your brain is stuck in fight or flight. It's making you think that what's happening doesn't match reality. My son could have walked away from that relationship and been in a healthier relationship. But in that moment, his brain overwhelmed him and he made a permanent decision about a temporary problem. So hope is the single leading most protective factor for our brain to hold on in those moments of desperation.
Wow, amazing. Ms. Warwick, are there any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners before we close? Also tell us how we may find you, how they may contact you in the future if they need to.
Thank you. The one thing that I want to say is the most important thing, and this is my takeaway, if you only hear one thing I say today, you do not need to be a licensed clinical therapist to save a life or help someone. You need to have a good set of ears. I always say suicide prevention begins with the ears. So what you need to do is you need to give somebody your undivided attention, put down your digital device, look into their eyes, okay? And I want to dispel the single greatest myth in suicide prevention. You cannot give anyone the idea of taking their life by asking them about it. In fact, just the opposite is true. So if you would ask me today, Leslie, are you thinking of harming yourself or taking your life? I would say, no, the thought's not in my brain, right? But if you ask someone and the thought has been in their brain, which it's very normal for many people to have that thought in and out of their life, we just don't want it to get stuck. So if it's in there and it's stuck and you say, hey, what's going on with you? Are you thinking about harming yourself? Are you thinking about suicide? And you need to use the word. It gives them permission to start talking. And then what you need to do is not try to fix it, but just be present and listen, because listening is the most life-saving thing you can do to prevent someone from harming themselves. So suicide begins with your ears, and we can all be better listeners, active listeners. And I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to share a little bit of our story. Anyone can reach me simply through my website, which is lesliehope.org, one word. And my email is simply my first name, Leslie, L-E-S-L-I-E, at lesliehope.org. And I welcome all of the bases or anyone who's listening in. I am growing in my opportunities with especially the Army. I will be heading up to Alaska in December. I always tell everybody, if you don't think I'm passionate about my work, I'm going to Alaska in December. So very, very honored to be speaking up there. at Fort Wainwright. And so anyone that would like me to come and share our story with their soldiers, please reach out. I travel all over the nation and I share one second of hope wherever I go.
Ms. Wyrick, thank you again for joining us today. And thank you for sharing your very powerful story of loss and triumph with our listeners. Thank you, listeners, for listening, and have an amazing day. Thank you for joining this month's Resilience Roundup podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please continue to follow the Directorate of Prevention, Resilience, and Readiness on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Stay resilient.